You are now listening to The Social Hour.
They're not PC, so if occasional foul language turns you off, then you have all been warned. This is the calm before the storm.
You need to bang where the people are, asking them questions and getting fingered.
Get ready for the social hour.
Live from Deez World Studios in San Antonio, Texas, this is The Social Hour. On today's show, comedian and filmmaker Dorian Vasquez. And now your host, to everyone that was recovering from a hangover the day after Cinco de Mayo, that's what you get for appropriating his culture, Deez Casillas.
Malib Keen, everyone. Welcome to the show. This is The Social Hour. I am Deez. Welcome back. Thank you for bearing with us for the last couple weeks off. As you know, I've been gone on the road, so I took a couple weeks off from the show. Just too much to edit and deal with this shit while I'm gone. So, you know, we're doing good. We got back to the weekly status of the show for the first few months of the year. You're probably going to have some breaks here and there when I'm gone. But otherwise, we're going to keep bringing you weekly episodes. Speaking of dates on the road, I'll be doing some stuff around San Antonio for the next few weeks. And then I will be in Salem, Eugene, and Portland in June 6th, 7th, and 8th. And then back around Houston area and Galveston, Houston, Katy, and more. So check me out there, guys. I'll be back at one of my favorite spots, Texas Tail Distillery in Galveston. Love coming out there. You guys are awesome to me. So appreciate that. Have you back. And then also I want to announce officially, since I signed the contract today, I will be with the Latino, the first inaugural Latino Fest Comedy Festival in Seattle this year, which is the 18th through the 21st of September. So come check me out there. My boy Juan Forno's putting that on. They're doing a lot of work out there. Fucking Canadian Latino, crazy. And he's not only are Latinos taking American jobs, Canadians are now taking American jobs by doing comedy in America. But that's going to be a good time. So check out that. All the information will be on the calendar soon, and other live dates and more. You know where to go. Just go to deezcomedy.com, check it out. And that's it, guys. We are going to get into it with our guest today. He comes to us from LA currently, but out of Philadelphia. He's a comedian, a filmmaker. We're going to talk about a recent movie he made, Porch Pirates, and more. Welcome, Dorian Vasquez. Dorian, how you doing, man?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me. Yeah. Congrats on getting into this Canadian Latino film comedy festival.
Yeah, well, you know, it's there's only, here's the deal. I mean, not to say that I don't think I'm funny, but there's only so many Latinos in the Northwest, and I was one of like seven for the last couple years. And although I don't live there anymore, a buddy of mine who's out of Canada but kind of lives in Seattle now is putting this on. And yeah. wanted me to come back up and do it. So happy to go up there and do it. It should be a fun time. So
that sounds awesome. I got to get on more Latino stuff, man. Like this is kind of the same issue in Philly where there's only a handful of us, but sure. Everybody's like, we're putzing around between New York and going down south, and we're always on different schedules. So it almost never comes to fruition the way we want. Yeah. When it does, it just like, it does. It's great. But yeah.
Plus,
that's awesome when it happens.
You know, plus if there's more than three of you together, it's a gang, you know. It's either a gang or a convoy. So,
yes,
you know.
Bingo.
You're, what flavor of Latino are you, Dorian?
My family is from Belize.
Interesting.
So,
okay.
Kind of. You mentioned Canadian Latino. I was like, yeah, I think that's what we refer to ourselves as.
The
Canadians of Latin America.
I assume being from, I don't know where you're from, but I know you live in Philly now. I assumed being an East Coast guy, you weren't Mexican.
Not at all.
Yeah,
I wasn't even Mexican on the West Coast.
So. Mexicans just never make it that far. I was in Atlanta a while back and doing a show and talking about Mexicans, and the crowd was looking at me like, And I get like, yeah. I have you guys never heard of Mexicans? You not have Mexicans?
Yeah, I was gonna say you're in Cuban, Dominican, Puerto Rican country there.
Yeah, this guy literally looks at me and goes, yeah, of course we have. We get ourselves a whole line of La Quinta hotels. And I'm like, what the fuck? That is such a crazy answer to that question.
That was a big trip when I moved to Philly, because I lived in Los Angeles most of my life. I'm from Inglewood, California.
Oh, okay.
And you know, it's always Mexican, Salvadoran, and yeah. You know, like Honduran, Guatemalans out here. It's yeah. a lot of, you know, Mexico to Central America. Then I go up there, and it's like, oh, that's where all the island ones are. The Dominicans, the Cubans, the Puerto Ricans.
Yeah, the Haitian, yeah, all that
and
stuff.
And no matter which side I'm on, none of them think I'm Spanish. So,
like, really? Interesting. Even with the last name Vasquez? They're like,
with the last name Vasquez. It's like, well, one, you speak English, you look white compared to the rest of us.
It's so funny. It's so funny, though, because, like, you know, being from LA also, I grew up Eastside Long Beach, and I always say, like, people don't understand because in LA, everyone knew I was Latino. Everyone was always like, oh yeah, yeah, you obviously. And then when in the Northwest, people just, they're like, we don't have a gauge of what anyone, you know, darker than Tom Selleck is. You know, we like don't fucking know.
People thought I was Asian when I lived in Ohio. No, I just, out here, I just look like a stoned white kid.
It's the glasses. They're throwing people
it's
off.
It's the glasses and the, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. That's see, I look at you even before I see your last name. I could look at me like, oh yeah, that guy's Latino, obviously.
Yeah.
But there's always, I always say there's like this LA Latino thing where, because, you know, everyone in Southern California was Mexican and then they all blended with other races. So like everyone out there is like either part Mexican, you know, or full.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's so funny because I just before, like, as I was walking earlier before we started this, I was walking back from the 7-Eleven right over here by the that they just opened on Sepulveda Boulevard. I've never seen that before.
Yeah,
but then I immediately run into the most LA looking Latina woman I've ever seen, just with the blonde hair and these fucking tattoos just across her chin.
Yeah,
it's like that is the most LA person. Like, she. If she was like waving a gun and saying "feed me," she couldn't have been any more stereotypically an LA Latina.
Right? Yeah, she had like her Dickies pulled up above her belly button with the.
Oh my god, dude! I was like, dude, it's so funny because it's one of those things that when I'm not here, I'm all like, yeah, that someone's perpetuating a stereotype. They're doing that, but then I'm here and I see it. I'm like, no, that exists.
Yeah, we are perpetuating the stereotype. it's funny because in San Antonio, where I live now.
Yeah,
I mean, not that there's not some of this in L.A. in Southern California, but we have like Mexicans, like these people were like probably most of them don't. Like, when we moved here, and everyone in my neighborhood drives really, really like my neighborhood's all Latino, and the people drive really cautiously and really slow and all stuff. Yeah. And my girlfriend's like, why do they drive like this?
It's like they don't got insurance.
Yeah, I go. I have no insurance, no driver's license, or any fucking legal documents to be here. They can't get pulled over.
Bro, they used to piss me. I thought my driving got bad when I moved to the East Coast, and it turns out, no. I've just always been an angry little kid because I'd always, go, like, having to drive to school every day and being behind one of those trucks was always the worst. It's like, bro, you are making me late.
They're not, there's a stereotype of Mexicans being slow. It's like, no, we got to be cautious. We have a swivel. We got to make sure we're,
They get cautious. Like, it's so funny. It's, That's the one group that, like, if you rammed into their car, they'd be like, yeah, it's fine.
Oh, it's yeah. Fine. 100%. Yeah, like, no, just go on. It's okay.
The most shit happens group of people is usually an old Mexican man who's like, eh, it's a work truck.
Yeah, I only needed three tires anyway. It's all right. Don't call the insurance company.
hey, man, it'll make it work.
Yeah. So your family, you're from Belize. You're not from Belize, but your family's from Belize. Have you ever been down there?
Yeah, my dad passed away in, was it 2020? So I go down there like once a year now to stay with my mom for a couple days.
Oh, she lives down there?
Yeah. That's, oh, nice. She moved back. They when they retired, they decided to just go back and, you know, just be back in their home.
Nice. I love it.
You know what? Maybe one day I'll do that. I'll move back to LA and spend $1,100 on a cardboard box.
Yeah. Yeah. If that, geez, nowadays the, Belize is beautiful though. I've been there a couple times. I love it.
Oh yeah. No, we live, she lives in Corozal. So every time we go, we're always on that, like that northern part, close to Mexico. So it's like, now that the borders open back up, it's like, it's very easy to go, you know, you can go to like Walmart and stuff. You just drive like a half hour.
Okay.
And then just like the actual water is beautiful because it's like, there's no reef, there's no anything. Everything's just kind of closed off. So it's very still water, no matter what day of the week it is, even when it's like a real big storm.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that area. I spent like a month on San Pedro one time. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah,
good fishing there.
Oh yeah, yeah. We actually did some like deep sea spear fishing, which was wild. Catching lionfish and stuff. It was crazy. But I didn't realize when I went there that it was like Belize is, I guess, like the number one diving destination in the world.
Yeah, it kind of started with the Blue Hole. My grandfather is actually kind of famously responsible for a lot of their tourism.
Nice.
Yeah. My grandfather is Jackie Vasquez, which if you, I don't know if he's still as famous as he was, but he was very famous in the 60s, 70s, whatever, because he was doing a lot of, he was one of the main people who was exporting like Jaguar to the States, like to put in exhibitions and stuff and in the zoos. And then like, you know, rich people would pay him to, you know, take them into the jungle so they can hunt one.
Yeah.
So, like, the only pictures I have of my grandfather, him just proudly standing next to a bunch of, like, dead jaguars.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's my family's fault. My bloodline fucked up.
Well, you know. They're bouncing back, I think. I think they're doing all right now. I don't know.
Oh, no, they're doing great. They're, like, up in Arizona now. It's pretty insane.
Yeah. Yeah, they've said they've seen him, in, like, Arizona and South Texas even. So, those guys, they're coming back, which is scary as shit, because... Like, I mean, I lived in the Northwest where we had mountain lions everywhere, which is crazy. But, I mean, I feel like, because when I see jaguar, I think, like, oh, I must be in the Congo or, like, a deep jungle, you know. But, no, you're just in fucking, you know, Sedona. Like, you're...
Yeah, yeah. Like, it's funny because their habitats, like, I was reading up on them, and the way their habitats range so far out that technically we're in jaguar country just being in LA or in, you know, in most of the cities. Like, everyone forgets that, that's we invaded their home.
Right. Yeah. If there was less city, they'd still be around a lot. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So what took you from LA to the East Coast?
Family stuff. My brother, I kind of blame my brother on it, to be honest. It's, he made the move to the Midwest and then started convincing everyone else that was the move to make. My mom and dad had a house here in Inglewood, which it makes me cry to pass it now because it's worth like a half mil. And it's like we lived out here and my brother had that like, I moved to Ohio and things are better. You can buy a house for like 13 grand and you don't have to. It's not real hustle bustle like it is in the city.
Yeah.
You know, it's a way better place to raise your kid, which is probably true.
Sure. Those things aren't wrong necessarily.
Yeah, but then we moved there, and my mom and dad moved there with, like, on this whim of being convinced that we'd all end up having a house and all this kind of stuff. And then half of us realized we don't really like winter or racist white people.
Yeah, both those things are really bad.
So I decided to leave, and... Since I couldn't afford to come back to LA, I just said, fuck it, let me try my luck on the East Coast.
Interesting.
I was always traveling back and forth from, like, Columbus to, like, Pittsburgh, Baltimore, D.C., and I'd always make my way up to Philly and New York, and I always really loved Philly. Yeah. So, like, there's just something about, like, the rawness from people out here back then was always refreshing.
Yeah, it's so funny. I've been to all over this country, and I never have actually spent much time in Philadelphia, and it's one of the few places I've always actually wanted to visit. It seems like a, you know, cool place.
Yeah, man, I love it. That meme, there was a meme for a while about how like people on the West Coast are nice, but they're not kind. People on the East Coast are kind, but they're not nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is like the biggest, that really is, it's not just a stereotype. That's a truism. Like every time I've met somebody like West Coast, they're very empathetic. Oh, I'm sorry that happened to you. On the East Coast, they're like, yeah, fucking dickhead. Why'd you do that?
Yeah. Just a dose of reality, you know?
Yeah, help you change your tire, but I'm gonna take my marriage out on you while I do it. Like,
yeah, well, it's one of those things where like I feel like people who have to deal with winter every year are just a harder type of person. You know?
Oh yeah, most definitely.
You know, because in LA it's like, oh, it's 78 degrees. It's somewhere between 78 and 80. It's like 85 every day, average 85 every day. You know.
That was the biggest culture shock leaving LA and moving somewhere else was like, you know what you sound like half the time is you sound like a kid who was spoiled his whole life.
Yeah.
Like got everything handed to him. And then now you live around poor people. And it's like, I don't understand why you don't just like, oh, your car broke. Why don't you just buy a new one? It's right. Like, bitch, because I don't have money like you.
Yeah.
It's that, but on the level of weather where it's like, I don't understand why the weather's like this. Yeah, because it's different.
Yeah.
It's just not, yeah, it's not LA. It's not sunny and hot all the time. We're not fucking lizards out here.
Yeah, I tell you, I could not do, it's part of the reason I moved to Texas is because, like, I hate the cold. I hate the snow. And because we grew up in LA, and then we moved to Western Montana when I was in my mid-teens, and I lived there.
Ooh.
Yeah. I lived there for like a,
I want to visit there, man. That place sounds awesome.
It's like that seems like it's beautiful, but
it's probably like great to visit in like the middle of like spring or summer.
Oh yeah, summertime. There's nowhere else better than the Pacific Northwest. Okay, but
oh yeah,
that summer is like 6 weeks long, and then it's trash. It's fucking terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's
and
you
just
know
back to desolate.
Yeah, I mean, because in the wintertime, literally, you'd have like 6 months where you can have a foot of snow on the ground at 0 degrees. You know, I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
So we lived there for a while. Then I moved back to LA and lived there for a while. Then I moved to Washington and like, but I live in Eastern Washington where it got cold and shitty too. And I'm finally, I was just like about a year and a half ago, I'm like, I'm fucking done. I don't ever want to scrape my windshield again. I don't want to shove my goddamn walkway again. You know, I'm done with it. So.
Oh, I get it, man. Like, one of the hardest things this past year was we had a new car. My old one died.
Yeah.
And I ended up leasing a minivan. And then the first snow that we got hit with, I, for some reason, never decided. I think I left all my snow shit in the car that got junked. So I was like, well, I guess I'm going to be out here with a kitchen knife trying to scrape this shit off my window. You know what I mean? Like, because I'm not about to walk in like 3 feet of snow to the store.
Yeah, like, yeah. Yeah, it's that shit, man. They're like, I mean, don't get me wrong, though. Snow is beautiful and there's things about it, but like the driving in it, you just have to add extra time. You got to give yourself like, it's like at least an hour of every day dedicated to just dealing with snow related shit that slows you down.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh man, the things you have to do for snow, the amount of clothing in my drawers because of snow.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
I used to just my drawer used to be like half full most of the time because it was all just all right, t-shirts, jeans, shorts, t-shirts, jeans, shorts.
Right.
And now it's like, dude, my drawers are packed to the gills because I have rain gear and I have winter clothes and yeah. I have long johns and I got all this extra. Like, it's like, dude, And I don't want to schlep it back and forth from the basement, so that's a me problem. That's just me being lazy.
Well, but still, I mean, you know, it's part of the lifestyle, man. That was such a great feeling when I left Washington, and I ditched so much of my winter shit. I'm like, I will never need this again. This is fantastic. This is my
I'll visit a Patagonia store when I need to, but otherwise,
yeah, if I gotta have a coat, I can find one, but I don't need to store one and to make sure I have it for half the year anymore. So,
oh man, that was the one thing that tripped me out too is the difference between just having any coat versus having to get a quality one because winter, is such a big, like, yeah, there's a reason Patagonia and Columbia and those companies are in business. It's because they produce some of the best products for that. And my dumbass, I'm running. I I remember one of the first like big like film jobs I got. I was a PA on Mayor of Easttown out in Philly, and I was out there in a Dickies work jacket, thinking like, "Oh, this is gonna be great." It's not. It's 16 degrees. Feels like 16 degrees. It sucks.
You're fucking freezing out there. It's crazy. Yeah. It was my second to last year I lived in Eastern Washington. I finally bought these nice snow boots, like insulated with fur and snow. I mean, like, and it changed my life. And I'm like, why haven't I owned these for the last 10 years? This is like, you can go, nothing gets through these. Whereas like you wear a pair of shoes in the snow, your feet are instantly cold.
Yeah.
Then your feet get wet. Your socks are wet. Then your feet are cold all fucking day. And there's no coming back from it.
It's so funny you mention that. I haven't seen a person wearing just a regular pair of Chucks in years. Sure. I think since I got back today, I'm in LA and I saw a guy wearing Chucks. I'm like, wow, they still make those? Yeah. It turns out, yeah, they never stop.
Yeah.
Turns out we just wear, New York, they monopolized Timberlands, and everywhere else got like Columbia boots and whatnot.
Yeah, it turns out like a quarter inch of canvas isn't enough to keep your feet warm.
Not at all.
During the wintertime. See,
the only time I ever see people wear that is like on a climbing job, like in the middle of the summer.
Sure. Then. Yeah, or if you're watching like basketball highlights from 1968.
Yeah, pretty much.
So what's Philly like? Especially like, you know, you do comedy and stuff like that. What's the comedy scene like? How's it? Because the thing I've been out in the Midwest and stuff, and the thing I've noticed that a lot of friends of mine too that live out there that love it for comedy is that there's so many major markets within a couple hours.
Yeah. Philly's weird with that because, I mean, New York is right there, but so is Harrisburg, Lancaster, Delaware, and Baltimore. Like, you're kind of surrounded by everything.
Yeah.
And the one thing that's weird about it is a lot of people will, like, I mean, this is a trap that almost every scene, I think, has where some people are like, man, I would love to go on the road. Well, fucking do it.
Yeah, go.
You know, you don't have to keep mobbing at the same mics every week. Or going doing the same shows with your friends every week.
Yeah.
I think it's the same everywhere with that. Philly's very drivable if you want to leave and go to other places around it, which is nice. I mean, what is it? In August, I'm going on the road with LaMare Lee. I'm featuring for him. We're going to be hitting pretty much all of New England.
Yeah, nice. Well, I mean, you can even get into Ohio, Indiana, even Chicago.
Yeah.
Hell, you know, I mean, like, you're, I mean, what
yeah,
do you...
Like,
probably less.
Like Cleveland's only like 7 hours away.
Yeah. I mean, which is far-ish, but I mean, you know, it's not that far. You know, especially if you. I mean, there's things in between too. You know, you fucking stop in Pittsburgh, do a night there, then head up to Cleveland, and
yeah,
I mean, yeah. That's the benefit. What's the? You said Harrisburg. What's that? Oh, the Comedy Zone. You ever worked that Comedy Zone in Harrisburg?
I don't. It's one of those spots I need to get to. My buddy does stuff there, and I keep asking about it. You know what it is, man? I kind of slowed down with really pushing myself for comedy as much, and it's because I've been doing movie stuff.
Yeah, it's tough to juggle everything, that's for sure, man.
Yeah, but, I mean, with that said, I'm getting – hey, man, I haven't been – asked to do more podcasts or anything till I started doing something interesting outside of comedy.
Well, you know, I mean, a lot of comedians on podcasts. So,
I could have just started a podcast and
if the world needs one thing, it's more podcasts.
Definitely.
I always say it's funny. Like people are like, oh, you got a podcast? I'm like, yeah, but also, I mean, I've been doing the show for 10 years now, so it's not like I jumped on it recently.
No, I don't fault anybody for having podcasts or having that happen, man. You do what you got to do. It's funny because I tried, I think I've tried to have a couple of them for a while, and every time it was like, it felt like you had to stick to a theme, which is easier to do when you're writing a story than it is when you have to do a weekly type thing. So that... I don't know if that makes a difference. Like, I like this kind of thing where you just get to, you know, just kind of talk and, you know, you gab around about whatever and figure it out.
Yeah, it's easy.
Like, but not every podcast works well that way, I've noticed. But, like, the ones that do, they really hit it. hit the nail on the head.
Yeah, I think people, I think, I don't know if it's, I don't know if it's laziness or, but like, literally, I mean, I think, you know, I've, like I said, 10 years, I've done 450 some episodes of this show, and I think I've done a total, like, 17 minutes of prep time for this show, you know? actually, I probably did more prep for this episode just because I watched part of the movie, your movie.
Okay.
So I actually, usually I just, I'm like, yeah, let's turn it on and see what we get into. So
tell me you watched 17 minutes of the movie without telling me you watched 17 minutes of the movie.
I've actually watched more than that. But I'm like I think the only other time I've given that much prep to a show is every year I interview the libertarian presidential candidate.
Oh, hell yeah.
So I do some work with the Libertarian Party. I do fundraisers for them every year and stuff.
Nice.
So I get to, I, you know.
I'm something of a libertarian myself.
Yeah, yeah. Is that?
Yeah. Don't tell my girlfriend, but yes.
She'd be mad. It's a good thing she's not interested in anything you do. She wouldn't listen to this show.
No, that's always been a funny conversation because I'm like, well, I kind of lead, like, I am for sure, like, a little bit more liberal. I'm a little left-leaning, but yeah. At the same time, like, I've always been one of those, like, devil's advocate bros. So yeah, I'm like, yeah, this kind of makes more sense. There's certain things I'm a little more conservative about than others, but.
Well, I think that, like, I think that literally most people who do, at least in my experience, most people who are libertarian are more liberal. It's just kind of like
usually boils down to, like, do I want a bigger or smaller government,
right?
Like, yeah
usually people who are libertarian are
economy
just,
stuff,
they're just into guns. They're like liberals who like guns.
Yeah, basically. I own several.
Yeah, so, like, you know.
I could do that in Pennsylvania. I can own all the guns.
It's a nice thing about Texas, too. My uncle lives here. When I moved here, I wanted to get, because Washington State has terrible gun laws. So I'm like, I want to get a couple more guns and do this. And I talk to my uncle. I'm like, what's the deal with Texas? Like, you know, waiting period, pistol, what do we got? And, you know, go to gun shows, probably some good gun shows. He goes, no. He goes, what you do? He goes, you go to the parking lot of the gun shows, find some guy in a van, he's selling the good shit. And I'm like, no, that's actually a really good idea. That's actually really sound.
I think that's how one of my buddies got swindled out of an iPhone. He bought it in the parking lot instead of walking into Best Buy.
Oh, yeah.
Turns out he bought an Android.
Yeah, well, you know.
Win some, lose some.
Yeah, it's, at least his Android doesn't have bodies on it.
Yeah, pretty much. It's funny because I usually Google a lot of estate sales out of, like, South Carolina, North Carolina, because it's, you know, it's like a 5-hour drive.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna be like, oh, I can go down there and pick up a fucking, I'm not even gonna pick up anything good. I'm gonna go pick up a musket or something, like,
yeah.
Just something dumb. Like, I really wanted one of those, like, cowboy guns with the little lever action on it.
Dude, yeah. Like, well, I imagine, like, in the, you know, that's what's so crazy when you start looking at that stuff in the East Coast. Not that there's not history everywhere, but I mean, that is, you know, the cradle of America as a country. And,
yeah.
You know, like the crazy old stuff that you can probably find out there that's it would be amazing.
Yeah. It's funny because, like I said, that's actually, you kind of hit the nail on the head with that. My libertarianism is literally, I'm actually a Democrat who likes guns.
Yeah.
And it's funny because a lot of the times now with the movie stuff, it kind of works out because I ended up writing a lot of guns into certain things, and there's certain guns I look up specifically because, oh, that would make a good prop if we take out the bolts on these.
What
I've come to find out, it's almost as, depending on what gun you're buying, it's almost as cheap to buy, just to go on GunBroker and, you know, buy a couple shitty guns that don't work anymore, than it is to just, like, get custom made air rifles and stuff delivered, and then you gotta sign all this other shit. Like, you can't own a BB gun in Philadelphia, but you can own as many handguns as you want.
But you can't own a BB gun? Because they look too much like guns, like, or BB, what?
I don't know what it is with the BB gun, but I from what I remember reading, like, you cannot, like, BB guns are banned lawfully.
Yeah.
Which kind of sucks, because I used to love BB guns. That's, yeah. I mean, that's how you get started into guns.
Right, yeah. It's the fucking, it's just the methadone of guns.
Yeah. But at the same time, those are the ones that you get when you don't get, when you want a cheap, when you have a cheap, like, realistic looking gun on set, is you get one that, you know, the revolver with the, that comes with the big rubber bullets, the cartridges.
Yeah.
That you just shove a pellet into.
Yeah, you're getting,
like, that's,
you gotta,
I forget.
Oh, go ahead.
I know, I'm getting a little esoteric with it, but that's, it was always easier to have that. And it's like, well, shit, if I got to spend all this money just to have it shipped directly to me because of all these weird laws, then get a real gun.
Yeah, like, just buy it. Plus,
and this way I could just have, now I just have a gun on set.
Yeah.
We just won't load it.
You're going to get Alec Baldwin, blanks. Man. Watch out.
I'm going to get Alec Baldwin.
Yeah, that's, you're going to, he's going to be sharing a cell soon. Like, oh, shit. Whoops, didn't mean that.
Usually whenever we do guns on set, I will actually spend the money on a prop gun, which I did for this last film. And I'm going to do again for the next couple of them. But I think it's hilarious that it costs almost the same as a real gun.
Yeah.
To get a proper looking prop.
Fake gun. Like, yeah, just get a real gun and then, you know, got a real gun.
Like, it should be at least $50 less, but it's not.
You think it would be almost like half as much. You're doing, you know, this is like way
cheaper. It's
like,
it doesn't even work.
Yeah, can't even do the fun part. Yeah, how are we going to shoot up a school with this thing?
Yeah, exactly.
What was I going to ask you about? Oh, what's Philadelphia? Philadelphia is pretty, like, a liberal city, right? Yeah,
that's a hard one to answer right now. I'd say it is a very, I almost want to say it's more of a libertarian city, but that's because both sides fight each other all the time.
Interesting. Yeah.
Like, there was recently a Trump rally out in Wildwood. I think it was Wildwood, whatever. Because Trump Casino, so it was out in like AC.
Okay.
And a couple of years before, they had the Proud Boy rally down by the, by Liberty Bell, and that ended up causing like a little riot in and of itself. So it's a mix. If depending on who you ask, it's one way or the other. I mean, but I think that's every city for the most part. But Philly's weird right now with it, because like it is a very working class city, and usually a lot more working class people tend to be a little bit more conservative.
Yeah, yeah.
But it is still a central hub. It's still a city, so it's right. Like I'm an IATSE union member, so it's like I'm running into all these guys with their shirts, you know, their weird slogans, their assholes live forever, and you know, if you hate this flag, get out.
Yeah,
kind
yeah.
of shirts. But these same guys are like building sets for the most liberal ballet on the planet. It's like, oh, the guy who otherwise would probably hate the show that he's literally building right now is building the cool one woman drag show.
Yeah. It's like this these Queers for Palestine march. It's like, I don't know if you know what you're marching for. I don't think those people are big fans of the gays, it turns out.
They're not fans of the gays. Probably not really that big fans of Americans, but that's kind of our fault too.
Yeah, I think we may have had a hand in that.
Maybe we shouldn't. Yeah, we're standing Israel for so long. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a debate I don't get into.
Well, it's very complicated.
The one joke I say on stage is that the closest thing to Israel-Palestine I know of is watching a black Muslim fight a black Israelite just over a parking space. I live in North Philly.
I met a guy, this comic, the other night who's a black Israelite, and I was just like, that is crazy. That's like a crazy thing. It's just so funny to be like, this guy, like, I'm like, I wonder where he falls in this Israel versus Palestine debate. He's like, no, he's like, fuck Palestine, but all not because I'm just because like the fake Jews are against Palestine. Like, it's just such a very complicated.
Well, it's so funny because the logic behind the guy black Israelites is actually kind of funny to me, because it's I kind of get it to a degree, because you know, if if human life started in Africa, then by that logic, then yes, they are the original Israelites.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. So, it's all.
I didn't study that deep of anthropology or history or whatever, so I can't really get that. Yeah,
what the hell do I know?
See, I don't have a degree in that, so I couldn't. I'm a very ill-informed man. That's usually my take.
I got to ask you this since you live in Philly also. I always see these videos of this very popular.
I'm sorry, hold on one second. Oh, go ahead. My volume got real low right now. Yeah. I don't know what happened. Sorry, what was that?
I got to ask you too, because you're live in Philly. I always see these videos on Facebook and everything of this, like, there's some street in Philadelphia with all these people on something called Trank now. Is this a big...
Oh, you're talking about Kensington?
That's it.
Yeah.
Is it wild down there?
Kensington. That's, yeah, that exists.
Yeah. Is it...
Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of the, best way I can describe it, it's the Skid Row of Philadelphia.
Is it... big? I mean, is it something where there's like, is it a couple people or is it a lot of people when you go down there?
You know what? It really depends. K&A is an interesting place because, there's a huge fentanyl problem. There's a huge trank problem down there. It's pretty wild, actually. Yeah. I'm always curious, like, how a place like that even exists, just given that, like, there's enough cops and, you know, people around that are just kind of like, they know what's going on, but it's like, for some reason, no one's really solving the problem. I think the one thing they want to do is introduce the, essentially the, like, government run crack houses. I know there's like a real name for it, like using sites. I forget the name, original name for it. But.
CIA. That's the name you're looking for. They call it the CIA.
but, you know, just places where people can use their drugs, like, safely or whatever.
Like, kinda safe, like a injection sites and stuff like
injection
that.
Injection site. That's the one. My bad. I called it a legal crack house. Like, fuck.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I got what you meant. It doesn't look as good on an LLC, but...
It's like it's one of those things like that those did not pass when it came about, and it's kind of sad to see, but at the same time it's like, dude, just that's the area you kind of stay out of. If you end up around Kensington a lot, then something's not going well.
Yeah, something's bad. You zigged when you should have zagged.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's one of those tough things because, I mean, I saw it happen in Washington State so much where, I mean, you know, the big cities, Seattle, Spokane.
I was going to say, isn't like Portland like that too, where like all the drugs are legal now and it turns out that's a bad idea?
Yeah, they walked that back recently. Because that only lasted about 6 months, or I don't know, maybe I guess longer than that, probably a year and a half, to where they're like, oh, this is a nightmare.
It's a very no man's landish kind of situation.
Yeah. Well, part of the problem is, you know, because I mean, in a sense, I've been a proponent of legalizing drugs like that in the past, and I'm not 100% sure where I stand on it now, but. Part of the problem is they look at these countries like Norway and stuff that have done that and have the safe injection sites, the legal crack houses, and but they didn't do any of that stuff. They didn't do any of the infrastructure, the putting money into counseling and social workers and safe injection sites. They just said like, okay, drugs are legal, and did nothing else. And you're like,
yeah, it's a very Wild West kind of way of doing stuff.
Yeah, and they're like, oh, crazy, that didn't work. And I'm like, of course it didn't work. What did you think was going to happen?
Yeah. it's so fucking weird to me, man, because I look at a lot of that shit and I'm thinking to myself, like, it has the potential to work if someone actually put in the actual, instead of just going, oh, we should do this, I guess we're saying the same thing. It's like, yeah. Put in that little bit of do a little homework.
Right. There's like infrastructure involved.
There was a way to do it right, but I don't think it was economically viable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, until like, until it is, you know, we're just going to keep, you know, people are going to keep just doing fentanyl in the middle of the street, holding the door open at Wawa or whatever.
Yeah, it's wild, yeah, right? Where I lived in Eastern Washington in Spokane. Yeah. They did this article in the local newspaper right before I left that it was about fentanyl use and like the skid row there, and it was crazy. Like the homeless problem had gotten real big and people were doing fentanyl every day. And this guy went and spent a week down there in Skid Row and hung out with all the people and wanted to like write an article about it. And he interviewed this one guy about it, about doing fentanyl, and this is what the guy said. He goes, well, first of all, he's like, you're gonna want to do it with someone. You gotta have a partner because you're gonna die. And someone's got to give you Narcan and bring you back to life. Like, that was the first thing he said. He's like, not you might die. It's dangerous. He goes, you're going to die, he said. And someone's got to, and then he goes, and second of all, you got to make sure you find a metal straw. You can't use plastic ones. Those things have chemicals in them. They're bad for you. And I'm just like, I don't know if that, this is a wild, wild ride we're on right now.
It really is a trip, man. It's so funny because I remember one of my buddies, like, years ago, I think this is even back with just weed. I remember I was rolling, like, a regular joint like you do when you're, you know, 16.
Sure.
And he's like, oh, you use regular white bleach paper? That has so many chemicals, as he's, like, taking the biggest hit off of this fucking, like, clove cigarette. I'm like, dude, what do you think you're doing right now?
Yeah, what's happening?
Like, how do you not see your own irony?
Right. Yeah, it was, I was, it reminds me, I was listening to this thing these people talked the other day, and they were talking about how, like, there's this article about how, like, you shouldn't let your, if your dog is around an open pack of cigarettes or eats these cigarettes, like, it could be, it's toxic, never let it, and it's like, like, people... But people can smoke them. You're like, so it's like, we know they're bad, but you're just like, we just do it anyway.
No. Dude, I remember when I think it's so funny, like, with those kinds of things, because I've been, like, especially last time I was in L.A., when they just started, like, it was, like, recreationally, it just got recreational out here.
Yeah.
Was, like I said, maybe, like 10 years ago now. But I remember just, like, there was, like, the head shop dog. Like, there's just a dog hanging out there, and it was clearly high as shit.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Laying down, just enjoying its life. It's like, but these same people would tell me, don't give the dog chicken bones. Like, oh, fuck yourself.
Yeah,
like,
the dog.
I've never had a dog die from eating a chicken bone.
Right, right. But the dog might not know how to deal with the existential dread of a fucking 200 milligrams of THC.
Now the dog can think everyone around him is an undercover cop or that he's secretly gay, but can't fucking...
Hey, you just made your dog a fish fan.
You have the most introverted, hungry dog on the planet.
So let's be sure and get some time in here and talk about your film stuff while we got you, Dory. The movie.
Oh yeah, definitely.
You recently put out a movie called Porch Pirates. You've done a bunch of other stuff. Tell us about that.
Porch Pirate is the first film I've made feature wise under my company, Baby Goblin Productions.
All right.
We did it as like a low/no budget feature.
Uh-huh.
Shot it in Philly and South Jersey kind of area, and a little bit more northern area, just outside of Philly. A lot of the movie was filmed in Berlin, New Jersey, in the main house in the movie. The film is about, basically, it's called Porch Pirate, like you said. We're essentially following a guy who kind of fucks his life up because he steals a package that turns out to be a trap. When he opens it up, he finds there's a human head inside. And really, the movie was written as what would be the worst thing that could happen to a porch pirate?
Yeah.
If it actually played out. And it turns out it will ruin not only his life, but also those people around him.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean,
at least... Yeah, that was my exploration of it. I could be wrong.
It seems like that turn of day, poorly, you know. Didn't end well for Brad Pitt when he found a head box in a head, or head in a box.
Oh man, I've been getting that every time people saw the poster for it. It's like, oh, you gotta. They just see a bloody box. They were like, oh man, is it like Seven? It was like, it's nothing like Seven. It turns out more than one movie can have a fucking head in a box.
It's like this is actually a sequel. This is a what if the FedEx guy delivered the head to the wrong address? ah shit, you know.
Yeah.
So I mean, how? So, first of all, I got. What did you shoot it on? Like what?
Camera wise, I shot it on Blackmagic movie cameras, Ursa Mini Pro, and an Ursa Mini, which are both. I'm not sure if they still are, but they're 4.6K cameras, and we shot those. I believe they're Netflix approved, which kind of means nothing if I'm being completely honest. So we shot it with proper movie cameras,
yeah.
And then, you know, a DSLR camera for a couple of driving shots. And then most of the sound was done with, a Rode NTG shotgun mic and a, Sennheiser, shotgun mic that I had. I bought an older model that needs to include a separate, extension for phantom power.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, I love that thing. It's not the newest product on the planet, but God, dude, it
works
great.
Well. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it is incredible the difference when you like, because I've got a couple nice shotgun mics, and like when you hear the sound quality, even like you don't even realize what sound sounds like
until, oh yeah,
you know, and like how they can really like pinpoint in just certain specific sounds so perfectly.
Yeah, it's funny because over the last year I've been last 2 years in my union, I've been getting a lot of work as an audio tech.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been having to listen to sound to make sure what sounds good and what doesn't, and that's definitely helped me a lot, because otherwise I would have went into this the same way I went, you know, recorded my would-be punk album when I was in high school, you know, just
yeah,
where it's just like it's really staticky, it's really like crusty. And this, I was able to just smooth that out. And even if the visuals aren't entirely perfect, because, you know, just lack of lighting on some spots, at least it sounds good. And yeah. I keep getting told that's the main thing, is make sure it sounds good and your story's good.
Yeah.
The visual work itself out.
Oh, yeah. Sound is like, I feel like sound is the most important thing with stuff like that. Because if it sounds bad, it's tough to hear, or there's like, that's the quickest turnoff for people.
Mm-hmm. It's funny, I was doing this and having to go back and audio correct everything has made me watch movies for completely different reasons now.
Yeah,
like, because I'm initially a camera op, like that's what I do. I own my own Steadicam and I'm good with that. So before I was watching movies and I'm watching for shots.
Yeah.
And now I'm going back and I'm listening to movies and I can hear when sound changes now. And a lot of people won't catch up. I'm like, ooh.
Yeah.
Ugh. I don't like that. Like a movie I just watched recently. I watched The Babadook again recently, and there's these random moments where it clips, but no one will pick it up if they don't know what the sound.
Sure.
What that sounds like.
Yeah.
I know what it sounds like, so I hear it because I've heard it in my own stuff before.
Yeah, and it's like glaring.
Yeah. It's funny because like I like I said, I work with a lot of like stagehand guys, a lot of rock and roll guys, a lot of movie guys. And that's the first thing they said to me is, like, I watch your trailer and I can tell when you have a different camera, or I can tell when you're using a different microphone.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, but that's not a thing that the average moviegoer is going to figure out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you can only impress nerds so much.
Right. Like, yeah, sorry you guys work in this industry. I can't.
Yeah. So I can't fool you.
What made you decide? I mean, I don't know if it was a decision, or obviously it's, you know, you kind of said you've been doing more film stuff than comedy recently. When and why did you kind of make that jump?
Well, I've always been interested in film. I dropped out of film school years ago, and you know, I ended up cycling back into that industry. Yeah. And honestly, like, I was working on Mayor of Easttown as a PA in Philly, and then as a comedian, me and Lamar Lee, Jay Simpson, and May Case, and all these comics, we decided to start putting together our own sketches.
Yeah.
During the pandemic, that's what we did. I mean, no one was working, so we were just collecting unemployment. We took all of our Trump Daddy Bucks, as I like to call them, or Daddy Bucks. And we just threw it at production for a short while, and ended up just kind of working out where I liked doing more film stuff. I had written a script because I was like, I should finally write something. And then when I did, you know, it wasn't 100% what it should be. Like, mm-hmm. It's not great, but everything gets it's just like jokes. Everything gets reworked.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it just one day I just said, you know what? Fuck it. The more I keep talking about, oh, one day I should make a thing. Why don't I just do it? I have the gear.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm kind of a hoarder with gear. I own most of my equipment. And I don't really like asking for permission on things, and I'm not going to wait for somebody's approval before I do what I want to do. Like, I'm 34 years old, man. It's about time to make moves.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. I mean, really, I mean, like, we were talking, same thing with, I think before the show started, we were talking about comedy stuff. It's kind of that same with any art form now. You kind of just have to go get your chops, make your, you know, make your product, and then if you make something good enough, someone will eventually throw some money at it. But there's not really, like, networks and executives and people are not looking for, like, the next fresh face that they can groom into something anymore. They're like, no, you've figured it out, and then once you've figured it out, we'll capitalize on it.
So one of the things that, I mean, the reason I made this on my own, I didn't really look for investors or anything, was because I wanted to see what I could do with as little as possible.
Yeah.
Like, some things we did have to throw money at certain things, like getting the right, making sure that we had the right cameras and the right lenses was one thing.
Yeah.
Everyone says, oh, you can shoot a movie on an iPhone, but, like, yeah, I don't want this to be iPhone quality.
Right. Yeah, you're going to be able to tell.
Other little things, like, you know, having to hire extra help and things like that was one of the big things. I make sure I pay everyone on my set, even if I have to pay them cheaply.
Yeah.
Like, someone's walking away with something, at least.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, once you're over that part of it, and, like, yeah, I have a little bit of debt for it now, but it's going to get paid off. So long as this thing is and it's doing what I want it to do. It just, I put it on Film Hub. It passed quality control maybe like 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I just checked it last night, and I saw that it got on, it's currently licensed with a couple different places, one of them being Amazon Prime.
Nice.
Which I don't know if that's a big deal at this point, but at the very least, it's licensed.
Yeah.
And it's out. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I basically don't have to worry about distribution outside of my own screenings now. And now I can move on to the next project. I feel like I'm, like, this one's getting close to, you know, the end of the trail as far as me having to really, like, promote it and not being able to work on the next thing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the bar for Amazon Prime is not necessarily super high, but it also is a great credit. It looks good. It adds credibility for sure.
I was going to say, that's really all I wanted was just, I wanted to just put something out so people can go, oh, look, he can make a thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Maybe we should put money into the next one if he's got another big script coming out,
which I do. What's the next thing you're working on? Are you able to talk about it at all?
I am. I have a short film that I wrote and actually shot maybe 3 or 4 years ago now. It's called The Patron. It's on my regular Dorian Vasquez YouTube page.
Okay.
That was written initially as a long movie script. That was about a 90-page script. And it's currently getting cut down from like 115 pages, hopefully back down to 90. But, that one is being reworked enough where I'm planning to pitch. I want to pitch that as the next big serious movie.
Yeah.
Otherwise, right now, man, it's time to just start taking a little step back. In the meantime, while I can get some capital under my belt, you know, start making smaller stuff. So a couple short films are going to be coming, are going to be in production soon. A couple sketches. It's just a matter of just, you know, finding the time and the right people for them.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So with this next project, are you looking at investors for this, or still self-produced again? Or?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I would like to get actual investors behind it. Before I even start making it, part of the pre-production process is submitting it to a few screenplay contests once it's ready.
Nice.
Actually, while I have some hours to kill, that's what I'm going to do while I'm out here. I'm going to just work on the script and hopefully before August or September, whenever this last contest is due, the one I'm really gunning for, I'm going to submit to that. because I think this one is this one's going to be a better project than the last one. Yeah. It's definitely the one I put a lot of years into.
Is there what's the premise of this one?
It's called The Patron. The initial premise for the short film was you're watching a guy who refuses to leave a bar, even though he's literally just holding up the bartender.
Yeah.
And it's again, a little bit more of a suspense-y kind of thing. The full-on script has a little bit more depth to it. It's not just like, oh, there's just this creep that won't leave. There's more of a story behind the creep, and there's more of a story behind the bartender.
Yeah.
And their motivations are actually, like, fleshed out a little bit more.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Initially, I just wrote Cape Fear in a bar, but now I get to expand on that and actually make it more of my own thing.
Yeah, that's great. So, are you like a film guy? Do you love movies then, or is that?
I do. It's so funny. I say that while also feeling guilty saying it, because I haven't really spent a lot of time watching a lot of newer stuff.
Yeah.
Like, there's a whole generation of movies I just skipped because at the time I just did not have the money to do so.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I like, it's so funny, on the plane here, I downloaded enough like good and bad movies to watch while I was traveling. You know, RoboCop 2 and 3 and Good, Bad, and the Ugly.
Nice, nice. All right.
You know, my movies that I like, they're a weird spectrum of good and bad. So.
Well, I feel like there's, people don't give bad movies enough credit, because there's like bad movies that are just objectively bad. But then there's bad movies that are so bad they like transcend bad and become good again. There's like an entertainment value in how bad they are. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think RoboCop 2 is a good example of that, having just watched it this morning.
Sure,
it's not a good movie, and it's one of those movies where I think Frank Miller is a good satirist, but I don't know if he's as good as, say, Paul Verhoeven, whom that movie, you know, made, you know, every one of his movies is a satire. Everybody forgets that Showgirls is actually a satire of show business.
Right.
You know, it's one of those things where you almost forget, like, sequels will ruin what you think the magic was from the first one if it doesn't get recaptured.
Right.
But I don't
think
it makes it necessarily a bad movie. After a while, it's like, well, this movie is just two robots fighting. I'm like, yeah, that's what the first one was.
Yeah.
The first one just had a lot more commentary on things, and it wasn't so blatant.
Yeah, it was more point. They used up all the commentary. Now they just have to do the gluttony in the next one.
It's a little more in your face because, some people understand subtlety more than others. I think Paul Verhoeven was a little bit more subtle with his, his digs at Nazism and fascism in the first RoboCop.
Yeah.
Where in the second one, the OCP logo is literally just a Nazi flag with OCP in the center. I describe the difference as a steak dinner versus a really good burger.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like they're both good. But clearly, one it has a little is going to be valued a little bit more than the other.
Right, little, yeah. I mean, Frank Miller is a phenomenal comic book creator, but he is a god awful filmmaker.
I don't know. Sin City was good.
Well,
Sin City
didn't direct Sin City. He created Sin City, the comic book. Robert Rodriguez directed. I mean, I think Frank Miller might have directed one of the vignettes in Sin City, but like.
Yeah,
Robert Rodriguez directed most of it. I mean, if you want to see a Frank Miller movie, he directed The Spirit.
I was just going to bring that up, and yeah, that was not good.
But I would call that unwatchable.
I think I saw it in the theater too. Gosh. I remember that movie.
Goddamn, yeah.
I only saw it once, and the only thing I really got out of it was, oh, Scarlett Johansson is really hot in a Nazi outfit, and it's like, what is this doing to me? Like, just.
Hey, well, you know, sometimes I wouldn't pass it up, all right? Be like, you know what? Sometimes genocide, you got to do it. I get it. As a film guy, I always got to ask, like, give me your like top three. What's your top three all time?
All time?
All time.
Wow. Okay. So I'm always going to pass because I usually depend on genre, but if I go complete top three, I think Baby Boy is up there.
Is was that
that's
the,
what That's with Tyrese Gibson and
Snoop Dogg.
And Snoop Dogg is in it. Yes, Ving Rhames. Great movie. It's almost like a hood Catcher in the Rye type of movie.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's see. I think the first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is one of the greatest movies ever made.
It is a great movie. Yeah.
I think, and I've argued this on many a podcast, and my girlfriend hates that I keep talking about it because she's annoyed, but it's a movie that if you took out the fact that it was the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, it's still a compelling story about a family family dealing with grief.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I can't watch that movie without crying now. So, like, that's it. You know, means a lot more to me now. And third one, I gotta put. I'm gonna say From Dusk Till Dawn.
Okay.
Because that's my favorite. I mean, it's hard to choose between a Quentin Tarantino and a Robert Rodriguez, and I'm a babe. I'm definitely a baby of both of those. Like that. Those are obviously the biggest influences on me. Yeah, Grindhouse came out when I was in high school, and I fell in love with movies like right then and there. That's when I was like, all right, I'm making movies forever, when I saw the Grindhouse movie in the theaters.
So what's Tarantino's best movie in your opinion then?
Well, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is, I watch it multiple times now because it just, that's a movie that makes me want to make movies, but yeah. I think Jackie Brown is still my top.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
That's people love that movie. That's like one of his least favorite movies, and everyone loves it. I need to rewatch it again because that's one that like never resonated with me, but everyone always loves. I'm like, what am I missing in this movie that I didn't connect with me?
It's his version of a blaxploitation is what it is. And I don't know what it is, but it has a charm that you don't find in the other movies. Like Pulp Fiction, everyone always says it's Pulp Fiction, but I don't know. Pulp Fiction is an anthology. It's not really a straight-up story through and through.
Right.
I think Reservoir Dogs is, like, it should be in people's top as far as how to make the best, like, first movie ever.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, Hateful Eight is kind of the same thing as Reservoir Dogs in that it's a lot of people in a house and they're all at each other's throats.
Yeah. I do also, I kind of don't count Reservoir Dogs because he it's a remake of a movie that he remade
City on Fire.
Yeah, nearly shot for shot. So you're like, it's like there's
it's the same movie when you don't see the heist. That's what it is.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I it's funny because I bought City on Fire on DVD and that's a movie where you see everything from the planning to the heist to literally every moment versus Reservoir Dogs, which is where you see nothing but everything else.
Yeah.
You don't see the heist, you don't see the main story. You see what happens behind the scenes of the main story. You don't see half the guys die.
I've always said that, and this is a controversial take, I think, in my opinion, I think Quentin Tarantino would have a much better, I think he's a better screenwriter than he is a director.
He's a tremendous writer, but that comes from the fact that he writes like a novel. So there's a lot of detail in all of his scripts. Yeah. And I like one of the worst things that it's a concise advice to give a screenwriter, but I think it's also one of the worst pieces of advice sometimes is they tell you don't have your action sections be more than two or three lines.
Yeah.
Which I kind of hate that because it's like, no. You need detail in order to express what you want. Essentially, Tarantino directs through the script. And I like to try to do the same thing. I try to emulate that as opposed to like, I'm going to storyboard this and then I'll figure it out based on my script, or I'm going to let someone else do that.
Yeah.
This guy goes from the script to the camera.
Yeah.
In one section. Yeah. Like that's he's there throughout the entire thing to make sure it's what he wants.
Yeah. I just always wonder like what some of his movies that I don't care for as much, if directed by someone else, what they would end up as. Because sometimes I feel like I'm not watching this movie. I feel like I'm watching a Tarantino movie, and that's not sometimes to its detriment, you know, where you're like taken out of.
Yeah.
Like I'm not watching this World War II movie. I'm watching Tarantino do a World War II movie, you know?
I think that's how I felt about Django Unchained, which I like Django. I mean, I don't think there's a single Tarantino movie that I hate. I've never, you know, even the ones that I'm like, ah, it's not as good as this one, I still love, like, it's still a really good movie. But I think by the time I saw, like, because I think Django came out right after Inglourious Basterds, which is arguably his best movie. But that, and then Hateful Eight came out, and I think this is actually why I like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. He broke away from his kind of by the numbers, oh, this is a tense moment where everything goes wrong for everyone.
Yeah.
And every one of his movies kind of has that, where there's that moment of everything is about to go wrong for everybody. And we just have to get through this next scene and see who's still alive at the end. Versus, yeah. Like, he even did that in Inglourious Basterds. Like, we met the, you know, the British spy character. He did that in Reservoir Dogs, basically. That's the entire movie, is who's going to live by the end. Hateful Eight is that same movie. It was just, it's one of those things that, like, some of his best movies are when he doesn't necessarily end with everybody dying. That's probably why I like Jackie Brown the most. It's like, you, the good guys win, and it's not even a typical story. It's just like, oh wow, this from beginning to end was just one complete story, and it was great.
I'm gonna have to give it another shake. It's been a long, it's probably been about a decade. It's time to give it a dust it off and give it a rewatch.
I still think From Dusk Till Dawn is That's actually the great example of, like, oh, it's his writing, but with someone else in the director's chair.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah. Look at True Romance, which I think is his best thing he ever wrote. So, and he didn't direct it, but wrote it, and I think that movie's incredible, you know?
Yeah, and one of the arguments he had with the director was, why did they live at the end? They were supposed to die. And the director's chair told him, because I want these kids to live. Like, I love these kids.
Yeah.
And it's like, and then he's like, had to admit, yeah, I love them too. They should have lived. Like, it's like, yeah, not everything needs to end on a down note.
Yeah, it's not always,
I get why, but nihilism. At the same time, it's like, sometimes you got to see people win.
Sure. Yeah. Right on. Well,
I'm saying that in a movie where there's no wins. So. Yeah.
Well, Dorian, tell people where they can find you, follow you, check out, keep up on what's going on with any of the movies.
Oh, yeah, definitely. On Instagram, I am at Dirty Deeds. That's DURRDEEDEEDZ. That's my personal Dorian Vasquez page where I see comedy and whatnot. Baby Goblin Productions is the other page. It's Baby Goblin Productions. It's all one word as an at. Same thing for the website is babygoblinproductions.com if you want to see the trailer for Porch Pirate. And you can see screening listings there as well as where we'll be streaming. I'll be putting those links up soon.
All right. Right on. Cool, man. Well, anything else before we get out of here today?
Just thank you for having me, and again, congrats on your Latino Comedy Festival.
thank you. It'll be fun. I'm happy to go. It's just a bunch of people I like getting together doing a, you know, comedy. No. Man, I can't. I love it. So,
I love hanging with people I like more than I like networking. It's probably why I'm not not as famous as a comic.
Yeah, it's one of those things, you know. So, all right, guys. Well, we are going to get out of here this week. Again, as for me, go to deescomedy.com. Check out everything going on across the network, live dates, and more. And that's it, guys. So for the Social Hour, I've been Deese. And for Dorian Vasquez, thank you very much, everyone. And we will see you all next week.